Support for NPR comes from the Skoll Foundation, partnering with social entrepreneurs and innovators around the world to accelerate solutions to the world's most pressing problems. Learn more at skoll.org. And the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation at rwjf.org.
Fisher. Americans with federal student loan debt get a break in the wake of the COVID-19 outbreak. Congress is working on that in its $2 trillion relief package. And President Trump last week said that his administration also will respond to the $1.5 trillion student debt problem.
Today, Secretary DeVos has directed federal lenders to allow borrowers to suspend their student loans and loan payments without penalty for at least the next 60 days. And if we need more, we'll extend that period of time.
Kellyanne Smith is a personal finance reporter for Forbes Advisor. That's a free online site. Welcome to the show, Kellyanne.
Thanks so much for having me.
Before the Senate passed the bill, the Republicans and Democrats had different agendas on this. The GOP favored stopping interest, and the Democrats wanted the six-month forgiveness period and $10,000 in debt relief per person. How have they bridged this gap?
So as of right now, what we do know about the stimulus package so far is that the suspension of payments will be expanded to 6 months, no interest, and that is going to be for federal student loans. So definitely expanding the time period there that federal student loan borrowers will not have to make their payments, and it will still be interest-free during that time.
And so how much does that make up of the total number of student debtors out there?
That's a great question. Some advocacy groups are saying that the stimulus package is leaving out, you know, the private student loan borrowers. But in terms of private student loan borrowers who might be looking for relief, I would tell them, you know, don't be discouraged by this. You can always contact your servicer. A lot of them offer hardship plans. So if you're not included in the federal student loan guidelines that are in the stimulus package, there might still be options for you. So just go ahead and contact your servicer and see if they're willing to work with you.
So we don't know how much of the total is going to be affected by this?
That's a really great question. And as you know, the House still has to vote on this and the president still needs to sign it. So I'm sure as that process moves forward, we will have more information as the Department of Education goes out and starts implementing these measures in the stimulus package.
Some employers compensate workers for tuition. There's a break for them, too?
Yes. So that's a really interesting aspect of the stimulus bill, and that mainly applies to employers who already have these programs set up in place. And I won't get too much into it because what I think is most important right now is for federal student loan borrowers to know that there is 6 months of relief, 6 months that they won't have to make payments with no interest. And another important aspect of this is that even during that 6 month period, it will still be treated as if you are making payments towards a loan forgiveness program. So that's really important because a lot of borrowers are in public service loan forgiveness and they're required to make 120 payments. So this will help them as well because it will keep them on track toward that loan forgiveness, even if they aren't making payments during this time.
The Trump administration has set federal student loans at, well, it's eliminated the interest for the next 60 days. And suspended them. If Congress approves the six-month reprieve, what happens to the administration's plan?
So I'm pretty sure that the stimulus package will just go into effect and those will be the new guidelines. Like I said, this situation is in flux right now. There's, you know, the House needs to sign it, the president needs to put it into effect. So as that process continues, more details will come out and we will see guidance from the Department of Education.
The Department of Education also stopped collecting on those in default. Do we know how many people that affects?
Yes. So the stimulus, so the Department of Education did provide guidelines yesterday about wage garnishment and tax seizures being halted. So that's what happens. They're what the Treasury call offsets. And that's what happens if your loans are in default. That's when they start taking a percentage of your paycheck, or they hold, your tax refund to try and repay that debt that has been defaulted. But in the guidelines yesterday, the Department of Education added that they will be refunding $1.8 billion in offsets. And they did say that those will be refunded to over 800,000 borrowers. So that's a big one as well, because any loans or any offsets that were in the process of being withheld on March 13th, when President Trump declared the national emergency, those will be refunded. And so that's also a big win for federal student loan borrowers as well.
Did they say when they should be able to get the checks on that?
So, like I said, we're still getting details as they come out. The Department of Education absolutely will provide its own guidelines once this stimulus package is signed and put into effect. So I know it's hard right now for borrowers to maybe see the light at the end of the tunnel, at least when it comes to their federal student loans. But a little bit of patience will go a long way here, because the good news is that the federal government is stepping in and providing relief here for federal borrowers.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the impact on student loan debt in the United States from the coronavirus pandemic. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guest is Kellyanne Smith. She's a personal finance reporter for Forbes Advisor. That's an online, free online newsletter, so check that out. Many people who work in the public sector rely on the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program. How will borrowers in that program be affected, especially if they're not able to work full time?
So the guidelines that were put into effect last week by the Department of Education, they are being expanded under the stimulus package. So any payments that are not made right now towards our any payments that are not made during the suspension period for borrowers on public service loan forgiveness, they're still going to count as if there was a payment made. So that's going to keep those borrowers on track towards loan forgiveness, because keep in mind, they have to make 120 qualifying payments to have their loans forgiven at the end of that program. So the good news is during the 6-month suspension period, they're not going to lose any time here. They're going to stay on track towards loan forgiveness.
It will be as if they had been making the payments.
Yes, that's correct.
Gotcha. I wondered if you could kind of summarize the problem. I mean, I did it in terms of, I said that there's 40 million federal student loan borrowers, just 40 million federal student loan borrowers. That doesn't count all the private student loan borrowers or the state student loan borrowers, right?
So federal student loans, those come from the Department of Education. There's not a state program. If you're referring to maybe grants or something from the state, keep in mind that's free money that people don't have to pay back. Mm-hmm. So there's federal student loans, and then there's private student loans. So I have not seen anything in the stimulus bill draft that I read in regards to private student loan borrowers. But like I said, those borrowers should not feel discouraged by this. There are a lot of banks that are already offering some sort of relief to their customers, willing to work with them. And you know what? The same thing applies here. They should pick up the phone and call their private student loan servicer and explain their situation and see if there's something that the servicer can do to assist them at this time. Like I said, a lot of those companies, they have hardship programs, and it never hurts to pick up the phone and call. So private student loan borrowers, although they are not included in the stimulus package from what I've read so far, they should definitely pick up the phone or contact their private student loan servicer online and see if there is something that they can access in terms of relief.
A lot of students use their credit cards to pay tuition. Is there any relief for them?
So that's going to really depend on who the credit card issuer is. So the same rule applies there. Definitely pick up the phone. Call the number on the back of the card, see if there's any way that the credit card issuer can help you. Some of the big credit cards, like the Apple Card, they were waiving monthly payments. So it really just depends. If you're ever in doubt, the best thing to do is to pick up the phone and call instead of just not making a payment, because, you know, those can have adverse effects on your credit score.
There was questions about whether or not there should just be total forgiveness. Tack favored by Democrats, opposed by Republicans. What about that?
So I think the topic of, canceling student loans or blanket loan forgiveness is always going to be a hot topic. Student loans affect so many people and the monthly payments are steep. As of right now, in the stimulus package the draft that I have read, there is nothing about canceling student loans. And so at this time, the most important thing for federal student loan borrowers to know is that their payments will be suspended for 6 months with no interest. And if they are working toward loan forgiveness, it will still count as if they are making a payment. And that also applies to individuals who are in loan rehabilitation. So if they were struggling before and were rehabbing their loans to pull them out of default, it will still count as a qualifying payment toward that as well.
Do they have to take any action to make that suspension occur?
So the Department of Education's guidelines last week, before the stimulus package was put together, it required borrowers to contact their servicers directly. From what I have read in the stimulus package that is expected to be signed today, I do believe that I read that it will be automatic, but like I said, we will have solidified details, more information after the package is put into effect and the Department of Education starts implementing the provisions in the bill.
Orlantha in Lima, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I just want to know what to do about my loan.
Okay. Have you been listening to the show?
I'm listening to it now.
Okay. So what kind of loan do you have? Do you have a federal loan, a private loan?
I'm not sure. I just know I had enrolled in college and I had to drop out.
Okay.
And I had to put that loan.
And you don't know where your loan came from?
I don't know if it was federal. I'm not sure.
Okay. Kellyanne Smith, do you have any advice for people like Orlantha, just how to, you know, that are really in square one?
Sure. I would say if you have any correspondence that's saying, you know, your student loan payment is due, you can find the servicer on there, and then you can kind of take it from there. You can figure out if it's a federal student loan servicer. The Department of Education's website has a list of all those student loan servicers that it has. It has a handful of them, like Nelnet, Great Lakes Student Loans. Those are a few examples. And so once you pinpoint if it's a federal student loan or a private student loan, you'll know which way to go. Like I said, federal student loans, their payments will be suspended for 6 months with no interest. Private student loans, you're going to need to pick up the phone and call that servicer and have a conversation about what might be available to you in terms of relief.
Orlantha, are you there?
Yes.
Okay. So it says here that you got a letter that your wages would be garnished.
Yes.
Do you still have that letter?
You know, I just moved, so me finding that letter would be very hard right now.
Okay. Was the school that you go to, was it a private school, like or was it a community college or a public university?
It was a community college.
Uh-huh. They may have some records.
Okay.
Okay, because usually, I mean, unless you got the loan direct from the lender, or did it go straight to the school?
I think it went to the school, and then it came to me.
Okay, well, they might have records of that, okay?
Okay.
All right. And so just follow up on it and make the calls, all right? Don't wait.
Okay.
I know. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Good. And hang in there.
Okay.
All right. Take care.
All right.
Let's see. Bill in Niles. Hi, Bill. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wondered if what you're talking about today also applies to parent student loans.
So parents who took out loans to help their kid pay for school?
Correct.
Okay. Kellyanne Smith, any thoughts about that?
So that's a really great question. Parent student loans are federal student loans. I did not see any specific language in the stimulus package, you know, about what type of loans are covered and not covered. It mainly says loans that are handled by the Department of Education. Like I said, this is a developing situation, so mm-hmm. we will have much more information as soon as the package is signed and put into effect. The Department of Education, of course, will put out guidelines with everything that borrowers need to know. And then, you know, reporters like myself, we will make sure to amplify that information and make sure that everyone has the information that they need.
Okay, Bill. Great. And, you know, obviously, as this thing develops, we'll be following it as well. So stand by for that as well.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you bet. Take care. Kellyanne Smith, I know I had a lot of questions you didn't have answers for, and I understand why. But thank you for your time anyway. I mean, I appreciate it no matter what.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Kellyanne Smith, personal finance reporter for Forbes Advisor. We'll have a link to that on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. We're going to continue our conversation. We're going to talk about who this impacts more than others and what sort of resources are out there for you. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Student loan debt hovers around $1.5 trillion, outpacing auto loans and credit card debt in the U.S., and that was before the coronavirus financial crisis. The Trump administration and Congress have taken some steps in recent days to provide relief to the 44 million Americans carrying student loan debt. We're talking about the problem and how the coronavirus has changed the equation. A recent study by Policy Matters Ohio found that Ohio's student debt collection practices disproportionately impact students at two-year colleges, students of color, and first-generation students. Pete Van Leer is a research consultant for Policy Matters Ohio, a liberal-leaning think tank. Welcome to the show, Pete.
Hi, Ann. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. In your report, which was released in February before the crisis emerged fully, I should say, you take issue with how the law requires student debt to be collected in Ohio. So let's outline that for us. First of all, why is the state of Ohio collecting on debt anyway?
So, yeah, that's a great question. So first of all, I mean, it was really good to have Kellyanne Smith on. And the issue that's being dealt with at the federal level is about student loans, whereas what we're looking at here in Ohio is student debt, and it's debt, it's money owed to Ohio's colleges and universities, right? So it's not about a loan. It's like, say, somebody was going to school, and they maybe stopped out or dropped out, and they didn't pay, they missed their tuition payment, or they have some parking fines or any array of things, right? So it's really about money owed directly to the schools, not about loans, but money that students owe.
Okay, and how much are we talking?
Well, right now, so the state law requires all public colleges and universities in Ohio to turn the debt over after a pretty short period of time to the Attorney General's office for collection. And right now, the Attorney General's office has, as of November, had almost 400,000 individual student debt accounts. And that value of those accounts altogether is about $735 million. But it goes back 40 years, right? State law doesn't allow that to be written off for 40 years. So if you missed a payment 35 years ago, chances are that's still on the records, still on the books, and you might be on the hook for that.
How do they prioritize who to go after?
Well, I think that I would imagine they – I don't know for sure what, you know, what their priorities are. They have a new debt is certified each year. So, you know, there's every year that the schools are required to turn over new debt and the agency starts to work on that. So I'd imagine it's about, you know, what's new. But there's a process by where, you know, the AG tries to collect, then they send it to a third-party debt collector and then another third-party debt collector. And when that, after a period of days, you know, a couple hundred days, really, about a year or so, then it goes to special counsel, to lawyers who can sue on behalf of the AG. So there's this whole process in place.
What's the, I don't know whether to ask what the average amount of debt is among these 400,000 accounts?
You know, I've got that number somewhere. I don't have it at the top of my
are we talking a ton of money here per?
No, it's actually pretty low. It's lower than you would think. You know, a lot of these accounts are very, very, very low. So here's the, for example, all four year schools, you know, they have average value per account is about $2,800.
Uh-huh.
But some of those are as low as, you know, just a few hundred, and some are much higher, obviously. But it really, it's not a ton of money on average.
What's the problem? You take issue with how the law requires student debt to be collected. So what's the problem with that?
So there's a couple of problems with it. One is, you know, the state has some pretty lofty goals, ambitious goals to get all adults in Ohio with a higher ed degree or credential or certificate, you know, 65% of them to have a degree or certificate by 2025, right? At the same time, we're like stopping people from re-enrolling, stopping people from quitting, because we have this, what I would call a pretty onerous, if not predatory, focus on collecting debt at the expense of students. So it's really about, why are you not thinking about how do we achieve those goals that will make Ohio stronger to get more people with post-secondary education, rather than thinking about this bottom line of dollars, you know, to collect the money, which really can really hurt, as you noted in your intro, this hurts mostly more impact on students at two-year schools, and those schools enroll more Black students, more Latinx students, part-time students, first-generation students. The students who are lower income and need the most help, and those are the ones we're going after to collect that, and it stops them, literally stops them from re-enrolling. They're not allowed to re-enroll if they have debt, and they don't get their transcript.
Right.
So
I think the transcripts is really harmful because you have to show the transcripts for jobs and things like that.
Right. It's a huge issue, and what it means is that those two things together, the debt collections practices, which is a state-level policy, and then the transcript withholding, which is more an institutional level. The schools decide what to do with that.
Okay. But they could release the transcripts.
They could, yeah. And so taken together, those two things really can trap people in lower-income jobs, you know, without the education they really want to get. So it's sort of this 1-2 punch that's not helping students.
You use the phrase predatory. What is the tipping point into the predatory practices that you referred to?
Well, I think that's a term, it just seems to be very unproductive, right? It's like, why is this such an issue? I mean, it sounds like a lot of money. So they, $735 million worth of debt, that's been turned over to the AG. The state collects of that about $50 million a year, which probably seems like a lot of money, but when you spread it across about 60 schools and you compare it to the budgets of those schools, it's really not a huge inflow of money, right? It's really not, the return on investment isn't that great. But when you look at what's happening at some of the schools in Ohio where they're trying to do something different, they're trying to look at debt forgiveness and re-enrollment and really supporting students to completion,
mm-hmm.
the return on investment they get is much greater. It's like they forgive the debt, but they make up in tuition that comes back in with those students, they get a lot more back. Plus, the students get the benefit of being able to re-enroll and pursue their educational goals.
By law, how much can the Attorney General's office? The Attorney General is the one that decides whether or not or how much interest to charge, right?
Yeah. So what the Attorney General does, what they told me is that they generally collect about 10% themselves, and then third parties up to 33%.
Wow.
And state law was changed. The Columbus Dispatch did some great reporting a few years ago about this issue. And as a result, one thing that happened was, you know, they noted that all those extra fines and fees are tacked on top of the debt. So it can really balloon the debt. So you might have a $500 or $1,000 debt initially, and next thing you know, it's $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 because of the interest over time and the debt, the fees and fines that are added. So the Dispatch did that story, and one of the results was that the state legislature passed a law specifically allowing the Attorney General's office to add those fees and fines and interest on top of the debt.
Who did that relieve?
Well, I mean, I think that
I'm trying to understand. It's like they codified what they were already doing.
Right, exactly. Okay. And I think it just made it clear that they could do that, and I think the idea is that it pays for the debt collection process,
right,
rather than taking it out of the amount owed. And the idea is to hold the schools harmless, but when you look at the small, relatively small amount that's collected on a debt, I think it doesn't make as much sense.
Well, we did invite the Attorney General or a spokesperson from the Attorney General's office to join us, and they declined our invitation. What do the schools, the community colleges, say about this, for instance?
Well, I think there's a lot of interest, increasing interest, conversations around how do we change this. And I think one of your later the people you're going to have on later, Julie, will be talking about what some of the schools are doing.
Mm-hmm.
They're taking a different approach to forgive debt and re-enroll students. And I think that there's a lot of interest in that. How do we really support the students and control this in a different way? So that's a big step. Again, that's more like a school-level policy. Statewide, there's some interesting conversations about what could change in state law. There's a couple of pieces of legislation that have been introduced. One of them would ban transcript withholding. So that would be putting in place, California recently did this, but the state law would say, you know, the schools, the universities and colleges cannot withhold official transcripts for students who owe the schools money.
Mm-hmm.
And the other would halt the collection of all student and medical debt owed to some hospitals by the AG's office, right? So that is another good step. That legislation would be another good step toward, at least temporarily, stopping that process.
And these are temporary things that you're talking about because of the virus?
Not necessarily. I think they've been in the works for a while.
Okay.
And there's some ideas around would it be temporary, would it be permanent? But I think the legislation that's being developed is more of a permanent piece. I'm not sure about the debt collection piece. There's also, my understanding is that the Attorney General, to its credit, the office is in the process of looking at signing agreements with the colleges and universities to stop, at least temporarily stop, the requirement that schools turn debt over to the AG. So there wouldn't be new debt collections efforts on debt that happens now.
But you mean, then that's virus-related?
Yeah, that's virus-related, yeah.
Just one thing. I don't want to take too much of a left turn here, but you mentioned hospital debt. So that's another issue that you've worked on.
It is not necessarily.
Okay.
It's mentioned in one of the pieces of legislation, but
okay.
I do know that medical debt is one of the biggest causes of bankruptcy.
Yeah.
And so I think it's really probably not a bad idea to look at how, you know, the debt collections piece more broadly. You know, this is one piece of it, the student debt piece, and it's an important piece, don't get me wrong, but I think the medical debt is really an issue that maybe you want to do a show on it sometime,
mm-hmm.
but it really is part of a bigger picture problem here.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I'm talking with Pete Van Leer. He's a research consultant with Policy Matters Ohio, which in February put out a new report that shows that student debt collection, and we're not talking about student loans, we're talking about student debt collection from universities, colleges, whatever, maybe they owe a parking ticket, maybe they owe on tuition still, something that they owe, maybe lab fees, who knows what it is, but that it disproportionately impacts students from two-year colleges, students of color, and first-generation students. I'd love to hear from somebody out there if you're in that position to talk about your circumstance and tell us what's worked for you and how it's worked for you. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Some colleges in Ohio are working to re-enroll students. How can they do that?
Well, what they're trying to do is get the students, one example, you know, they're looking at how do they, before the debt is turned over to the AG's office, there's different ways to fund that. They can forgive the debt under certain, they set their programs and they forgive the debt, and then they work with those students to re-enroll them quickly and give them extra support, advising, you know, in terms of academics, but also on the financial side. So I think it's like they can do it if they get to the debt soon enough and if they put students on a payment plan, you know, that can help. So there's a lot of ways that they can do it if they have, you know, the capacity at the college level, the university level, the staffing to do it, and you know, the ability to really put that in place. So I think we're seeing a bit more of that, and people are starting to see the value of it.
Let's see. Melissa in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Melissa. Hello, Melissa.
Yes.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
So I was actually a master's degree student at the Ohio State University in the Women's Gender and Sexuality Studies program.
Mm-hmm.
I had some mental health issues and I dropped out.
Okay.
I had a $2,000 loan at OSU through OSU that got turned over to the district attorney's office. And
Wait. Stop. Wait, right there. There is no district attorney.
Attorney General.
Gotcha.
General.
Okay. Okay. Yep. Okay.
And so I originally had $2,000. I now owe $7,000.
Wow.
2 years ago, I had the opportunity to test to become a teacher in a high-risk school. And I called to try to get them to do something to allow my transcript just that one time for mm-hmm. my bachelor's degree,
mm-hmm.
which is not where the debt is from.
They won't release your bachelor's degree. Okay, interesting.
And I just need my bachelor's degree transcript. They wouldn't give me anything until I paid that $7,000 off.
Did they offer you a payment plan or anything like that?
They offered a payment plan, but because I currently work in the gig economy,
mm-hmm.
their payments minimum acceptance were like $100 a month. And to lose that would be $100 of my grocery money for myself and my daughter.
Hmm.
And I even emailed every single dean in OSU. I emailed everyone and they literally would not release that transcript. That job would have meant $50,000 a year for me.
Wow.
Versus the $12,000 that I make now. And my graduating GPA was a 3.456.
Yeah, Pete Van Leer, Melissa sounds like a textbook case here.
Yeah, boy, that's a really hard story, Melissa. I'm sorry to hear about that.
Yeah.
But it is exactly what we're talking about on both sides. You know, that with the school not being willing to release a transcript, even though, you know, that student, Melissa, has earned that, you know, worked through and got the degree and got what she needed to do.
Pre-loan, pre-debt.
Exactly, yeah. It's like that's really kind of outrageous. I mean, it doesn't really make sense. It doesn't help anybody, right? It doesn't – how does that help the university, you know, and there's an unaffordable payment plan. And it just really makes little to no sense. And this is – you know, if you compound that, you look at – there are, with the Attorney General's office, there are some 390,000 active student debt accounts, and those are all linked, probably a lot of them at least, are linked to withheld transcripts, and you can imagine a lot of stories like Melissa's where they cannot move forward, get that better job, and that doesn't just help them, it helps their communities, it helps the state. That's a needed job, you know, a teacher in can really make a difference in a lot of lives.
Gosh. Well, Melissa, good luck, and God, that's rough. Take care.
I just wanted to call in because I heard you guys talking about it, and I was like, this is literally the battle that I fought two years ago.
It is. It's literally, and I wish, you know, what I'm going to try to do is get a comment from Ohio State on this kind of practice and maybe what they're going to do going forward. I told someone earlier that, you know, this topic is always an issue, and in the light of the pandemic more so, you know, kind of try to listen in or see what we come up with down the road. Okay, and good luck.
Yep,
take care.
Thank you.
Pete Van Leer, thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Ann.
That's Pete Van Leer. He's a research consultant with Policy Matters Ohio. A recent study by Policy Matters Ohio found that student debt collection practices disproportionately impact students at two-year colleges, students of color, and first-generation students. You heard one example of what the student debt collection can do. So stay with us. We are going to continue our conversation about student debt, including loans and the kind of debt that we've been talking about this segment. Give us a call if you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. In Ohio, the average college student owed $30,629. That's in 2018. And when an Ohio student loan debtor falls behind on payments, they are not permitted to re-enroll, and public colleges and universities are banned from providing their college transcripts. Some colleges are finding ways around those barriers. Julie Zeltner is the Senior Director of Adult Programs at College Now Greater Cleveland. That's a nonprofit program that seeks to enroll or re-enroll adults in college. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right. So tell us about these barriers. We were talking earlier about just debt. It could be anything from a lab fee to a parking ticket that students owe colleges. You're talking about student loan debt.
We deal with both. And
okay.
What Pete was just addressing is a barrier that's, kind of insurmountable, as you heard from Melissa. We found all of these students because that's our whole reason for being, is trying to get adults into or back into school to complete their degrees. And in the process of looking for these students and working with colleges, we found this to be a consistent problem. We had no idea how broad it was, and that is why we had Policy Matters do the research so we could understand how big of a problem it was. So as you can see, it's very broad, and for us to try and get to that 65% credentialing in Ohio, this problem has to be addressed.
Okay, so you commissioned the research. I wasn't aware of that. All right, so I'm trying to figure out what next. All right, so what is your sense about how the colleges and universities are responding to this problem?
So our sense is, and again, it's anecdotal, we work most closely with our Northeast Ohio college partners, Cleveland State, University of Akron, Tri-C. They seem, LCCC, they seem very willing, and they want to help the students. And what Pete was referencing was a partnership with Cleveland State that we had, where we were reaching out to their students who had stopped out and found this consistent problem. Well, Cleveland State would like to institute, and has indeed, a debt forgiveness program, but the law that requires the debt to be sent to the Attorney General within 45 days gives them a very short window to find and assist those students. If they could hold on, if the schools could hold on to the debt longer, they may be able to help more students. What I just want to tell you is, like, adult students or lower income students, this is kind of a way of life, is they can't go straight through. They stop, they start. They, if they owe a little bit, they believe that they can work a semester, take it off, pay it back, and get back in. Well, then they find out that that debt is now in collections and growing exponentially.
All right. So how do you work with colleges and universities on this?
Well, the first piece that we do, and I'm very happy if we could spread the word a little bit, is that our whole job is to do direct service with students, especially adult students, who want to continue or restart their education. So in doing that, when we come up against these kind of issues, we can take one by one each individual student, ask the college to look into the situation, and if they can knock down certain barriers, they will. But that's how they learned better about what's going on with the number of students that have these challenges. And then, for example, Cleveland State came up with this debt forgiveness problem to see if they could address it at the institution.
What is the rationale for I was interested in Melissa's story,
yes,
because they're withholding transcripts that are bought and paid for.
Yeah.
They're withholding undergrad transcripts for debt that was accrued during her master's program.
Yeah, that was an extreme case, but we do see some of this. I think that the rationale is that you know, once you have a degree, you can't really take it away. It's not like you could repossess your degree. So I think this is the only thing that they can, the only leverage that schools think that they have. But now it's been kind of, I don't know, it's an accepted practice. But I really think we have to look a little more closely to see if it's achieving what they want, especially when the collections, you know, aren't super successful. The percentage that's collected isn't very high.
You might have heard an earlier caller from Lima who didn't even know who she owed the money to. It's just that they were going to start garnishing her wages. How? What is your understanding about how well people, especially non-traditional first-generation students, understand what kind of debt they're getting into and what it is?
Our experience is that it's extremely common that people don't understand how the system works. And these are very smart people, but it's so complicated, and that's kind of what we specialize in. I've been talking specifically about institutional debt, but we also work with thousands of people on managing their student loan debt. So a couple things happen is you take the loans and, you know, it's all fine and good until you need to withdraw. And what can happen then is that some of the federal dollars need to be paid back to the federal government if someone withdraws early. Mm-hmm. And then what happens is the school then charges the student back that money. So that's something students constantly leave school and don't understand that they're even, they don't even know that they have a debt because they was covered when they were there. And then all of a sudden, boom. And then with the student loan debt, yes, it's also very confusing. And the Lima resident, if she withdrew early, the loan is still there. You don't have a credential. You just kind of got deeper into possible debt. But that is, I just want to emphasize this, we are free services. If you're having a struggle with either of these issues, this is what we do all day long, is walk people through their options.
Okay, we'll post a link to the website for College Now Greater Cleveland. Will you help anybody or just people in Northeast Ohio?
We'll help anybody. I mean, we're 100% virtual now, so we do virtual advising sessions.
Okay. I want to bring in now Prentice Haney. He is executive director of the Ohio Student Association, and that's an organization that lobbies for universal access to higher education without debt. Welcome to the show, Prentice.
Good morning. Thank you for inviting me.
I wanted to get your thoughts about the federal government's actions to suspend student loan debt payments for 6 months with no interest. Just kind of get some feedback from you about what's happening at the state and federal level in response to this huge debt out there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we know that the last couple of days with COVID-19, there's been a lot of federal action to bring relief to working people across the nation. For students specifically, this new bill, will give some relief in making short-term breaks for making payments, involuntary collection, interest, you know, all those things. And it's a good first step. However, you know, there's some major pitfalls in it. You know, there's about 1.2 million borrowers with different types of federal loans that won't be protected by this law. And, you know, it's basically a opportunity that's being missed to alleviate historic inequitable student debt burdens, you know, by not canceling debt for folks who we know in 3 to 6 months still won't be able to make those payments as the economy is recovering.
Wait, what are you talking about? Federal student loan debt?
Yeah.
That won't be covered by this?
Well, there are still other types of federal loans that are not covered in the bill.
Federal loans for students?
Yeah.
Like what?
like some of the more private loans, some of the
private, but not federal student loans.
Well, there some of the private ones are managed federally. I mean, so there are some places that are not covered that are still managed federally that they have the ability to apply relief.
Like what?
And so all I'm saying is like some of the private loans, and I don't have the exact federal loan right in front of me, but based on what I was looking at, there's still at least a million borrowers who are not protected. So I'm just saying there's still more borrowers that need a relief
mm-hmm.
that not going to get it. And well, so that's the main point.
Well, an earlier guest, Kellyanne Smith, personal finance reporter for Forbes Advisor, said that the private loan companies, you know, that they should pick up the phone and call them and find out what kind of relief they could get from them.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And also, I mean, you know, in a moment like this where, you know, the federal government can play a huge role in helping support all borrowers, there's a way that we could support that process as well. I mean, there was legislation on the table to forgive up to $10,000 for borrowers, which
right.
would make a huge impact in terms of equity. And so, like, that sort of bill, and that would have actually, like, helped move it forward. But while we know that right now the relief of just, like, making sure payments are deferred and there's no interest is helping in this moment, but in 6 months we're going to have the same issues when people have to come back
right.
and the economy is still recovering.
You know, Julie Zeltner, I was wondering, for student debtor, you know, student loan, people who have student loans out who have not been laid off, who still have income coming in, even though they're suspending all these federal loans, could they just keep paying on them?
Yeah, absolutely. So the options are, so all the interest rate is being suspended. So that's a great thing. And this is actually, if you're in decent shape, this is a great time maybe even make a bigger payment because it's all going to principal.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are able, this might be an opportunity for you to knock down the principal. You know, everybody else that, you know, is struggling, you do have that forbearance option to just put your loans in forbearance, stop everything, and then, you know, not get the interest accumulating. So it is a good opportunity for both types of people.
The $10,000, whatever did happen to that, Prentice Haney? Nothing? They didn't include it?
Well, it wasn't included in this package.
Yeah.
It went up for debate in the Senate, and it did not get included in the final deal.
Okay. Do you know how many, I mean, you said that would make a big difference. The average student or the average student loan debt out there is about $30,000, right?
Yes, for Ohio.
For Ohioans. Okay. All right. What going forward are you looking for, Prentice Haney? I mean, obviously, presidential candidate Bernie Sanders wants to erase student debt as a centerpiece of their campaign. But the next best thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's relief that can be done on the federal level and also the state level. I mean, so New York a couple of years ago developed the Get on Your Feet program, which is a program that they cover student loan payments for a number of years for residents who decide to stay and work in the economy of that state.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's something that Ohio could adopt, especially since we have such a high rate of student loan debt in the state.
Yeah.
If we actually encouraged our young people to stay and build jobs in the economy and got relief while they were doing that, it could help them actually bring down those that payment.
Okay. Well, Prentice Haney, that's all the time we have. I thank you so much for yours.
Thanks.
You bet. Prentice Haney, Executive Director of the Ohio Student Association. Also, Julie Zeltner, Senior Director of Adult Programs at College Now Greater Cleveland. Thanks for your time as well.
Thank you.
That's it today. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.